So I'm curious, have you ever known anyone who you kind of take a look at them and it's like, man, they got it together. Like, you know, they got a cool house or a cool car, or maybe they're just someone who's really good at their job, or maybe someone who kind of got this kind of, just something that you really wanted. And you look at them and you go, man, they've got it all nailed. And then suddenly you find out something in their lives. And you realize that maybe they didn't have things together the way you thought they did. Maybe to have those things that they had, maybe they were deeply in debt. Or maybe they were doing well, but somehow their family was a bit of a wreck. Maybe you've had that in your own life. You know, I think there are times in any of our lives where we feel like what we have to do is put on kind of a facade, putting forward a sense that our lives are going better than they actually are. And why do we do that sort of thing? I mean, we want to have good lives. We want to have healthy lives. You know, we want to live a life that is meaningful. Well, part of the challenge is doing that's kind of hard, right? Life is filled with reality. What a pain, right? That there are just hard things in life that you can feel like you're doing everything right and it's just not coming together. Or maybe sometimes we do things we know aren't ideal and we kind of hope we can get through them. And I think that one of the things that's a bit of a danger for us is when things aren't going in our lives the way we would like them to, there's this temptation to kind of fake it till you make it. Well, I'll just pretend that everything's good. And maybe I'll spend resources I don't really have to make it look that way. Or I'll behave in a way that kind of puts things forward in the way that makes it seem like they're better. Now, though I do believe there are times in life where fake it till you make it works. There's, you know, studies show that if you actually act happy, you will feel happier. So that's kind of a case where fake it till you make it does work. But when it comes to our own kind of our lives and dealing with disorder in our lives or a sense of things not being the way that we kind of want them to be, often fake it till you make it is not helpful. In fact, it's sometimes harmful. That as you start to put forward a facade, you start to feel like a fake. I'm not saying you are a fake. I'm simply saying that's the feeling that we start to get as we do those things. And so what do? We go into the struggle of trying to help ourselves feel better. And we get into that cycle of trying to help ourselves feel better. Well, remember that last week we started the series, What If Self-Help Isn't the Best Help? That what if the way to find meaning in our lives, peace in our lives, a sense of purpose, what if maybe the way to do that is to not focus on ourselves? And we kind of kicked off last week that kind of a reality about this is that it seems that one of the best ways to actually have a sense of meaning in our lives, a sense of purpose, a sense of peace, is to actually help other people have that. That somehow it seems that those two ideas are much more closely linked than we might think they are. That we might be tempted to think that, well, the way to be the best me is just be all about me. But have you ever known anyone who's all about me? Aren't they a blast to be around? Of course not, right? The most amazing people are the people who are not all about me, people who reach out in other people's lives. Now, it doesn't mean we have to do it to our own detriment, right? There is a case for, you know, you got to rest when you need to rest. You need to balance things out, you know, and those can get way out of hand if we're not careful. But if we are mindful of our own well-being, while being willing to stretch ourselves to make a difference in the lives of other people, I think that's where we find kind of the deepest meaning in our lives. Now, remember that we talked about last week that, you know, how do we get on this path of finding deeper meaning in our lives? And that was kind of our focus last week. And what we said is that, well, you got to find a starting point first of all, right? The world is filled with lots of challenges. And if we try to chase every challenge, we're just going to exhaust ourselves. And honestly, if we kind of took in all the news in the world that was really difficult and that were bad things, it would be crippling. And we do have kind of, I think, generally speaking, a natural ability to let a lot of that stuff kind of go by. We limit, you know, I personally limit how much news I read. I kind of read the headlines, first couple paragraphs, so I know what's going on. I don't need to know every gory detail about everything that's going in the world. I should know what's going on in general, but I don't need to know every detail. But then for each of us, I truly believe that there is some issue, there is some cause that connects with you differently than other causes do. You know, is it people having limited access to food? Is that something that just connects with you differently? Is it issues where children who need kind of extra help in school can't get access to that? Is that something that connects with you? But there are lots of things out there that can do that. So what we said last week is that the starting point for all this is that identify that thing that connects with you more deeply than other things do. And the language that we used was, whatever that thing is that breaks your heart, actually let it break your heart. Be moved by something that is meaningful to you. And then we said, once we did that, the next thing we would do is say, well, okay, if I identified what this is, I don't even know how to get started in terms of making a difference because the problem just seems so big. So we said what we would do then is that we would seek God's leading. We would be honest with God, and we would say, I don't know what to do here. And if you do that long enough, God will reveal something to you. He will reveal a path for you. And so what we set out last week was kind of the two ends of a journey. That if we know we want to make a difference in a certain area, that gives us a destination. If we can think about how to start, that gives us a starting point. So what I want to talk about today is, well, which way do we go? I mean, if I want to make a difference in the world, if I have some goal in mind, if I can just arrive at a place where I look like I've achieved that goal, does that take care of it? Or if I can kind of ride along with someone else who's doing all the work, does that take care of it? The question is that if we want to make a difference, does the path we take matter? I mean, when you're trying to change a little piece of the world in a meaningful way, does it matter how we get there? Does it matter what we do? And I'm going to argue that it does. Then when we're doing meaningful things, when we're trying to actually transform a little piece of the world that we are really moved by, in that case, the journey is just as important as the destination. It is not just about getting there. It's the things that we do along the way that actually make the difference. Because that's the thing that transforms us. You know, we don't want to Star Trek teleport, just jump to the other end. Right? When it's the walk, it's walking with people. It's being with people in the good parts of their lives and the challenging parts of their lives. It's actually walking through life with other people. Those are the things that transform us. Those are the things that give us this greater sense of meaning in our lives. That as human beings, we find meaning and purpose not by arriving, but by traveling on the way to arriving. Now, what I'd like to do this morning is something a little bit different. Now, I'm new here, so it's all kind of different, right? But I actually want to show you a very short music video. And it actually captures this idea. Now, this is a video from a Christian musician named Zach Williams. And the song is called Less Like Me. And the operative line in the song is a little more like Jesus, a little less like me. And the video actually paints a very interesting picture of understanding the difference between a destination and the journey. Because you'll see as we start the video that there's a guy driving a bus, happens to be the singer, and he's heading somewhere. Now, the video doesn't let you know where he's heading, but I'm going to give you a little spoiler alert. He's heading to a church service. And as he's making that journey, he has a choice: to drive a straight line to the church service or to deal with the things that come up along the way. A little more like Jesus, a little less like me. Read the Gospels. Jesus was never in a hurry. In fact, it frustrated his followers sometimes. Because keep stopping and talking to people and helping people. What's that all about? Right? And imagine this kind of, let's kind of pretend this video is a real thing, right? I mean, the musician could have shown up at church, drove by all those people, got to church on time, been there clapping his hands, waving along, playing his music, all along knowing that he had left people behind on the journey. Because the journey is about people. Because what good is church if it's not about people? Just another club. Right? We are here to connect with one another. We are here to carry one another. We are here to be honest with one another. The journey matters, and the journey has to be about people. And that's the thing I'd like us to see today, that the things we do as Jesus followers has to be focused on people. Everything comes after that. That the most successful undertakings we have in our lives, the things that will make the most difference, the things that will create the most meaning, are things that revolve around people. And it is so easy to lose sight of that. I mean, honestly, this importance of being focused on people, I think is true for everyone, right? Whether someone is a Christian, a Jesus follower, they don't believe any of that stuff. All of our lives are better when we focus on people, on caring for people, when connecting with people. But if you consider yourself a Jesus follower, if you consider yourself a Christian, it's not optional. It's essential. And for the church, you know, this church, the global church, it's also essential. Because Jesus made really, really clear that we are in the people business. What did he tell his followers as he was preparing to go to the cross? Love others as I have loved you. That is a people-focused command. That's our job in everything we do. No matter what phase of life we're in, that's our job. If we ever lose focus on that, if anything gets in front of that, we're heading the wrong direction. We're driving the wrong way. And as the church, we have to keep our eyes on that. Because churches, like all organizations, can lose sight of the importance of people. Churchy things start to get in the way. And Jesus had no time for that. Jesus made clear that everything we do is about people. You know, other things that we do, I'm not saying they're not important. They are, of course, important. But always, the most important thing that we do is serve people, connect with people, lift people up. And we're a small church. We don't have a lot of resources. We can't do a lot yet. But we can do a lot for one another. We can get together with one another. We can prioritize knowing what's happening in each other's lives so that no one stands alone when they're dealing with an issue. Because knowing that people actually care about you for real makes a difference. So let's make sure we're doing that for each other. Being present when someone is suffering makes a difference. I hadn't planned to share this, but it's kind of on my heart right now. My sister died at 34 years old and was sick for a long time before she died. And my sister was surrounded by people who cared for her. Her family was all far away, but her church family showed up day after day to walk with her, to carry her. They couldn't save her life, but they sure could make the time she had a lot better. What can we do in someone's life when someone is struggling? Whatever that struggle is, what is our opportunity to make a difference? Oftentimes, it's not a big thing. You know, one of the most important things we can do with each other is be present with one another. As long as we're focused on people, we can go forward. We can make a difference. We can do the sort of thing that Jesus called us to do. Now, remember that we were actually part of a series. And the series is kind of, it seems almost kind of, at first, kind of incongruent with what I've been talking about. Because remember that our series is about looking at the life of a guy named Nehemiah. And the thing is, Nehemiah lived like 400 years before Jesus. So he couldn't know what he was doing, right? Right. The thing is that Nehemiah, if we look at Nehemiah, in the latter portion of his life, he developed this incredible people focus. And Nehemiah actually gives us a framework for how we can do that. Now, again, I'll remind you, if you decide to go read the book of Nehemiah, keep in mind, Nehemiah is not Jesus. He gets angry, he has a bad temper, but he also demonstrates to us that we do not have to be perfect to make a difference, especially if we put people first. Now, just as a real quick refresher, remember that Nehemiah lived, to say, about 450 years before Jesus. He lived in a time where the nation of Israel had been conquered by foreign powers. They'd been under foreign rule for decades, I think upwards of a century. And when that nation was first conquered, the people who lived in the area of Jerusalem were required to move away. That's kind of a standard practice of the conquerors, to kind of break the people up so they can't congregate. Well, as time went on, a new ruler rises up and actually allows them to go back to the city of Jerusalem. And at first, this seems like really good news. But as we saw last week, when Nehemiah asked how things were going, because remember that Nehemiah was not in Jerusalem. Nehemiah actually lived 1,000 miles away. So he'd asked for news for how things are going with people returning to Jerusalem, because it seemed like this would be good news. And it wasn't good news. That as the people returned back to the city, the ravages of war were still in place. And the perimeter of the city had actually been destroyed. And remember, in the ancient world, your city perimeter was your security, the gates and the walls and all the things they would put into place. If that wasn't there, the people were not safe. And Nehemiah realized this group of people, most of whom he had never met, were in trouble. And he decides that he wants to do something about it. He heard that his people that he was, in his case, he was related to in a distant sort of way, were getting to go home. And although he'd never met them, his heart started to break. But what could he do? And again, he lived 1,000 miles away. Well, he started by doing what he could. He actually starts with a prayer. And we talked about this last week, that he begins this prayer for guidance, but then he moves beyond just praying for guidance. He starts to put together a plan. And we actually have kind of an excerpt from his prayers, because remember that Nehemiah, the book of Nehemiah, is actually his journal. So we actually have his thoughts documented, his prayers documented, in addition to the things that went on. We have all that documented. And in one of his prayers, as he's kind of getting ready to try to figure out what to do next, he actually gives us the closing to his prayer. And this is from Nehemiah 1:11. His prayer starts out, "Please grant me success today." Notice this is not a, "Hey God, you need to fix it" prayer. This is a, "I want to be part of the solution. I want to be part of making a difference," which seems utterly impossible. But he prays, "God, please grant me success today." And notice what he says. "By making the king favorable to me, put it in his heart to be kind to me." So he knows the reality of his situation. He's not delusional. He knows that by himself, he can't do all this. So he's praying for something that seems utterly outlandish. He's praying that somehow, the king will help him. But do you remember from last week what his role in the kingdom is? He's a servant. He has no authority, and no substantial authority, outside of maybe other servants. His job is cupbearer to the king. What's the main part of his job? Drink the wine. If it's poison, he dies instead of the king. Great job. Clearly loved by the king. Right? But that was his job. And he's actually willing, it seems, to go to the king with this. Now, he is not a free man. He has no substantial resources of his own, yet he's willing to take this to the king. And the thing that's kind of interesting is that as we look at his job, cupbearer to the king, an indentured servant, no real resources, well, that sounds a bit like a limitation. Sounds a bit like a weakness. Like, what could he possibly do from there? What will we see from Nehemiah is what looks like a weakness from the outside. He chooses not to see that way. He says, you know what? I might be a servant and I don't have much, but I have something very few people in the world have. Access to the king. Keep in mind, at this time, the king that he was serving would have been likely the most powerful man in the world. And he sits, and Nehemiah sits with him every day. So basically he says, you know what? I can do something others can't. I can talk to the king kind of anytime I want. Now that's super qualified, just to be clear, right? You don't just walk up to the king like, hey, how's it going? You know, don't do your best Steve Martin, like, you know. Come on, that's a little funny. Come on. Right? Is that he can't just, you know, they're not peers, right? Keep in mind, the king is willing to let him die every time he has a glass of wine, right? So they're not peers. But he is in the presence of the king. And we do get the sense that the king has, to some degree, taken a liking to him. You know, now it might be like the way you take a liking to your dog sort of thing. It doesn't seem as a, you know, same sort of thing. But there's a relationship in there of some sort. Now, the thing is that the idea of taking this to the king, even with a good relationship, this is an incredibly bold plan. Because if this goes wrong, it can go really wrong. Because if you approach the king and he's not happy with anything you're doing, what you say, how you say it, the look you gave him when you said it, in all those cases, at a minimum, he could lose his position and be given something that's kind of much harder to do. And depending on the king's mood, the king could even have him executed. I'm not saying he would do that in this case, but the risks are very real for Nehemiah. But here's the thing that I want us all to see. No matter what you're trying to do, no matter where you are in your life, no matter what phase of life you're in, no matter how small we are, we can be very tempted to look around and see things as a limitation, as a weakness. But there's an interesting thing about God. God tells us that in our weakness, we find strength. And so the thing that Nehemiah shows us here is that what appears to be a limitation can actually present an opportunity. Because there's something unique about all of us. There's something unique about our positions and what we have and what we can do. And so it turns out the thing we see as weakness may actually be a strength. Because when we're doing things that God calls us to do, God says, don't be afraid of your weaknesses. Don't be afraid of your limitations. I might actually have a plan for you that rely on those limitations, that rely on those weaknesses, that will put you in a position to do something someone else won't do. Or maybe just give you a boldness to step in and do something that others won't do. I truly believe that each of us here, both individually and collectively, are somehow uniquely positioned for success. There's no surprise that this church is here many years after it was built. It is no surprise to God that each one of you are here right now. It's no surprise to God that this exact configuration of people that we have at this exact moment in time are here in one of the fastest growing areas of this particular city. It seems like there might be an opportunity there. And I'm going to bet that our opportunity is built on exactly who we are at this moment in time as we seek God's leading in the things we do. But now for Nehemiah, he does show us something else. So he's willing to be bold. That's really important. But he's got to be thoughtful. Right? As I said, he can't kind of just go running into the king and blurt out to him that, hey, king, I need this from you. That's not going to go well. So what he had to do is that, in addition to having an idea of what he wants to do, he's got to start to prepare. Whenever he engages with the king, he's going to get one shot only. So he has to actually wait for his moment. As we read the book of Nehemiah, we find out that he waits about 4 to 6 months before he actually approaches the king. And if you've ever had something that was really important to you, right, waiting 4 to 6 hours is hard. 4 to 6 days is hard. 4 to 6 months? And keep in mind, every day, he's in the presence of the king, having to decide not to do something. But then one day, something that wouldn't seem like a good thing happens. One day the king looks over at Nehemiah and notices that Nehemiah doesn't look well, doesn't look happy. And that's not allowed. When the king asks you how it's going, the answer is always fantastic. Because everyone exists to lift up the king. But Nehemiah tells us the king noticed that he appears to be feeling down. And Nehemiah goes on to tell us, when the king says, hey, what's going on? Nehemiah says, I replied, long live the king. How can I not be sad? For the city where my ancestors are buried is in ruins, and the gates have been destroyed by fire. So he had his moment. He took his chance. This could be his only shot. This is probably his only shot. He doesn't know if it's going to succeed or not, but he does it. And he does the unthinkable. He told the king his problems. And I will assure you that in that moment, as soon as he finished, he's holding his breath. Because he doesn't know what's going to happen next. But then, the king asked, well, how can I help you? That doesn't make any sense. What's the servant's job? Help the king. King doesn't help servants. But somehow that happens. And now this is where Nehemiah's got to step all the way in. You know, if he basically had just said, you know, this thing happened, you know, and I just need a second to pull myself together, that would have been easy. But that's not what he does. The king says, how can I help? And you know what Nehemiah's going to do? Tell him. You want to help? But notice what he does before he speaks to the king. With a prayer to the God of heaven, I replied. Now, I guarantee you, this is one of the shortest prayers that any of us have ever told. Right? This can't be some big, drawn-out prayer. This is kind of a God help me prayer. Right? He asked for success. We don't know. Did he ask for success? Did he ask for the right words? Did he ask for favor in this moment from the king? All we know is that before he opens his mouth again, he prays. And then once he does that, he makes his request to the king. Nehemiah says, if it pleased the king, and if you are pleased with me, your servant, send me to Judah to rebuild the city where my ancestors are buried. Now think about what he has to do. He has this huge undertaking, rebuilding the perimeter of the city. That's a pretty big undertaking. But did he go on and on and on about all the things he had to do and all the people and all, it's going to be horrible and I'm heartbroken and, you know, and my sister's cousin lived down there, and he didn't do any of that stuff. What did he do? Clear and to the point. And that's a critical factor in any endeavor that we take. If we cannot put succinct language around what we want to do, our odds of success are super low. If we can kind of succinctly identify what it is we want to do or who we are as a church, or those sort of things, being able to state things like that to the point helps us to be more successful. Why? Well, a couple of reasons, right? One is that we can communicate to other people more effectively what we're trying to do. But the other thing that's really important is it keeps it clear in our heads. Right? When we're emotionally connected to something, we're going to tend to kind of ramble down different paths, emotionally, I mean, or intellectually. But if we have a clear, succinct path, this clear, succinct thing we want to do, that keeps us on task. So Nehemiah had obviously put all that work in to get there. But now, what's interesting now is that as he states it, he gets to the point, the king does have some other questions. So the king asks him a few other questions to try to understand things. One of the key, big questions the king asks is, well, how long are you going to be gone? And Nehemiah never tells us how long he tells the king he's going to be gone, but based on the story, it was probably longer than he said. But what's interesting is that once he gets this kind of yes from the king, he might have been very tempted to go, I got it. He said he'll help me. And he runs out the door. Well, what help did he get from the king at that point? None. So he better know what he needs. So before he gets started on this path at all, he had to identify what he needs. So while he still got the king's attention, he says, hey, oh, by the way, you want to help? Here's some of the stuff that I need. Now remember that this is the ancient world. So traveling is difficult, and traveling can be, you know, inhibited by any number of local governors or anything. So he tells the king, going, well, I need documents from you, so I'm allowed to travel around. Oh, yeah, and by the way, that perimeter around that city that you control that was conquered because of war, I'm going to need lumber for that. You've got a great forest. Would you give me approval to take as much wood as I need to fix that perimeter? And the king says, sure. He gives him everything he asked for. So how did he have that kind of success? How did he pull that off? Two words. Prayer and preparation. See, I think that sometimes we forget that we need to do both those things. Sometimes we think that just praying is enough. Come on, God, fix this. And sometimes he shows up and does that. But generally, it's the answer should be, or the prayer should be, I don't want to tell you how to pray, but when we have time, I think the prayer is, God, help me to do this as you would have me to do it. Help me to bring the pieces together that you lead me to. And then get to work, putting together a plan. That sometimes we use phrases like prayer or Holy Spirit led as an excuse to not do the work. We have to do the work. We lean on God really hard, but we also work as hard as we can. And that's what Nehemiah did. And that's why he was prepared. And the thing that's kind of interesting is that if you read through Nehemiah, after Nehemiah has said, hey, king, will you help me? Hey, king, I need documents. You know, I need the lumber to actually fix the perimeter. The king says, you know what? Travel out there is kind of dangerous. I'm going to send an army with you as well. Now, a small army. So you'll be safe when you travel. And so that shows us that the king certainly had some kind of affinity for Nehemiah. But notice that Nehemiah, because of prayer and preparation, dedication to his cause, his people-focused cause. Remember that when he wants to go out and fix the perimeter, his motivation is not, I'm going to go build the most big, most beautiful perimeter ever put around a city. That's not his motivation. His motivation is not, when I get that perimeter fixed, the name Nehemiah is going on the side of that. No, what he said was, there are people's lives who depend on this city having a secure perimeter. His mission was never about the perimeter. His mission was about the people. And that's what we always have to stay focused on, that the things that we do are about people. And what Nehemiah shows us, that when we have a focus on caring for people, when we put together prayer and preparation, incredible things can start to happen. Unimaginable things can start to happen. And there's a phrase that was spoken by an Anglican minister at the turn of the 20th century, or he lived around the turn of the 20th century. His name is Basil King. And he's an Anglican minister, and I love this phrase. Go at it boldly, and you'll find unexpected forces closing around you and coming to your aid. That if we want to make a difference in the world that we find ourselves in the, as I always say, in the place where God has placed us, we need to go at it boldly. We need to be willing to do things that seem a little harder than we think we can do. We need to look at our construction, our strengths that we have, but also not be afraid of our weaknesses, not be afraid of where we're not quite sure how we can pull all the pieces together. Because we see over and over, if we read through the Gospels throughout the entire Bible, small groups of people coming together and doing big things with this formula of prayer, preparation, boldness, lean hard on God. Don't be afraid to do scary things. And as we think about this idea of having a meaningful life, how do you think Nehemiah's life was impacted as he did this? I mean, think about that. For as long as 6 months, he had been praying and putting together this plan. And then finally, that moment comes, and he does it all, and he gets through it. How's that going to impact him? I mean, how's that impact his faith? When he gets everything that he was asking for and more, how's that impact his faith? As he goes on this journey later and he begins to repair the perimeter of the city, how's that going to impact his faith, his sense of self, his sense of well-being? Although Nehemiah is on a journey to repair the perimeter of a city, to protect the people in it, he's also on a personal journey of transformation. That the man who starts out as a servant, who is the throwaway for the king if the wine is poisoned, will become a man who stands before God, doing what God called him to do, changing more lives than he could have imagined, because he was willing to take that journey, because he was willing to transform the lives of the people in need by doing the work that he could to protect them, his own life becomes transformed. And that's the thing that I want us to take away from this as I wrap up, that basically what we see happen in Nehemiah's life is available to each and every one of us. Right? So if we start out like we talked about last week with that idea of being moved to make a difference somewhere, and then as we start to see that direction forward, we do what Nehemiah did. We start out, we pray boldly, and we pray often. That in that 4 to 6 month window that Nehemiah was in, as far as we can tell, he was praying every day. My bet is multiple times a day. So he stayed in prayer, and he did that. But the key is, and so often, we're tempted to stop there, and we can't. We got to go on from there. We got to put a plan together. We got to decide what it is we want to do and how we're going to do it. Now, plans may evolve over time, and they may have to be tweaked as we go, but we got to start out with a plan, and it needs to be clear, concrete, succinct, right? We need to know what our vision is of who we are and what we're going to do. There's something someone said one time that I think is so impressive. I'm a little afraid to say it, but I'm going to do it anyway. Somebody said to me one time, Jesus did not die on a cross so we could go to church on Sunday. Jesus did not die on the cross so we could go to church on Sunday. Being a worshiper of Jesus calls us to go to church and be together, but we're not here just to sit in the pews. We're here to change lives, to touch people's lives, to transform lives. We need to be in church, absolutely, but the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus was about so much more than that. It's about giving people better lives in this material world and leading them on a path that gives them a better life in eternity. We come together here to be ready for that and energized for that. But we got to have a real plan for doing something more than that. That's what we're called to do. That's the work we're called into. So please, if that phrase offends you, it's not my intent. But it's an important understanding that we're called in to do the work, to make a difference. And I think that no matter where we are in our lives, we can do that work. If you read through Nehemiah, he spends years and years and years working on this problem. He probably was a fairly older man when he got to the end of it, but he never stopped working on the issue. And I don't think any of us need to stop working on the issue. And the key thing that we need to do in everything we do is keep the focus on people. As soon as our focus is anything but the well-being and connection of people, we might be looking in the wrong direction. We might be driving by the problems so we can go wave our hands at church as opposed to be part of solving the problems and making a difference in the world that we're called into. Understand, you can do more than you think you can. You know how I know that? Because I can do more than I thought I could, and I'm just getting started. And I would tell you the things I've done in my past, but it would not be a blessing to you. Right? I didn't come to faith until I was in my 40s. There's a lot of time before that. There's a lot of things that happened in my life that God has rescued and transformed. And I will tell you that no matter where you are or what you are doing or what you're going through, God has a plan for you to do something if you're willing to be a part of it. If you're willing to, you know, pray boldly, pray often, put together a plan that's focused on people. Together we can do amazing things. And I believe we will.